What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Today is Tuesday, the evening of May 22nd. Pod comes out on Wednesday, the 23rd. You'll hear it from then and beyond. So we're back. It's Maddie Wood and I. Maddie, I don't know if you had a chance to catch any of last week's episode, but it was a pretty well acclaimed. It was with Sammy Reed and Eric Samulski. And just like a random combo of folks I put together, but it was a really fun episode to record, talking about like family life and being able to be a content provider and fantasy player. And they're really sharp guys, man. It was just like a really nice flowing conversation. It was kind of more just like basic general strategy and life stuff.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, especially being a happy, proud father of a 2.5-year-old, getting to hear the day-to-day life struggles, you know, time consumption and having to spread out what we do and how we do it, as well as trying to be effective when doing all of these things. Being a great father, first and foremost, being a great husband is right there next to that. And then hopefully you're able to be a great fantasy baseball player. But for most of us, if not all of us, it's not first and foremost, right? Being a great fantasy baseball player isn't the highest of our priorities. So it was good to hear you guys kind of talk about how to kind of, you know, go over those hurdles and struggles mm-hmm. that we all kind of battle with, but it's a blessing. So yeah, it was a great podcast. Unfortunately, I was supposed to have Sammy Reed on for my Monday guest, and I haven't done an episode now for 2 weeks after the passing of my dog Scully. But it was nice to see that you were able to scoop him right up. So it wasn't too much time wasted on Sammy's schedule. So I was appreciative of him to be able to still come on and give us his time. And yeah, well done overall. Watching baseball tonight, we've got a lot of good stuff and crazy stuff yet again happening. The Toronto Blue Jays are kicking the shit out of the Rays right now. They put up a 20 burger. So the box scores are loaded tonight just with the Toronto Blue Jays in general. And then we have Bobby Miller, our boy, rookie, making his debut for the Los Angeles Dodgers, throwing 100 against the Atlanta Braves on the road and Spencer mm-hmm. Strider. And he's currently... Is it safe to say out-dueling him? Like when it's a pitcher versus a team, like it's not like Strider's actually facing Miller. Yeah. You know, some people, how do you take that? Like, can you say Bobby Miller's out-dueling Spencer Strider? Is that something that you can say?
Yeah, they're both whatever the hell we want. But. We could say whatever we want, but that's the way that I take it. It's two competitors going up and taking their turn on the mound, and they are essentially dueling, right? Technically a duel is a one-on-one matchup. So the hitters are doing the pitchers and whatnot, but yeah, I think in baseball terms, that's kind of how we break it down. And Bobby Miller. Yeah, man, he looked good. The feeling I had after the Gavin Stone outing, which all in all, wasn't all that awful in the middle innings. The first inning, obviously for Gavin Stone was pretty brutal, and then the final inning for him wasn't all that good, but it was solid in between. And it's funny how people sometimes want to. Nobody's rude, but it's just I got these sort of like semi-respectful messages, like, "Oh, he's done. This guy, you know, he's not any good. He's not ready." Like instant like DMs as soon as like he was going to shit, and it's like, you know, hey, I mean, I never said I was the biggest Gavin Stone fan in the world, nor could I predict exactly how his first start would go, specifically in Atlanta. But it's a long season, man, and that's interesting. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. I mean, we could talk about it now. Really, there is a situation here with Dustin May. He's now not going to throw for at least 6 weeks. If you have any Dustin May at this point, you may as well drop him. Obviously, not in dynasty leagues, and so. One of Bobby Miller or Gavin Stone are pretty much locked in to this rotation, essentially for the rest of the season. There could be room for both. I mean, for now, both will be in because Julio Urias is not returning until early June. And so, really, I don't know. It really comes down to how Noah Syndergaard performs. If he's just, you know, kind of piddling along the way he's been and just kind of, you know, getting it done, but not really pretty. maybe they keep him in and send down one of the guys if they're struggling. But that's a great start for for Bobby Miller on this Tuesday. And he's going to be the newest free ticket or big ticket item coming up this week.
So as of now, Tanner Bibee has been the most expensive Fab acquisition, with Taj Bradley second behind him. I think we see Bobby Miller potentially surpass both after this first outing, throwing 100, goes five innings, gets five strikeouts, only allows one earned run against the Atlanta Braves on the road. He threw the slider 26% of the time, changeup 24%, four-seam fastball 22%, sinker 12%, curveball 12%, for a total of, let's see here, 53 swings. The outside, I'm trying to see here, O-swing was at 38%. There it is. So you did see plenty of goodness. The CSW was pretty down, but he was getting swing and misses, and he was getting them to chase outside the zone. So, and obviously the velocity was way, way, way up there. So elite stuff all around for Bobby Miller. He should come away with this with the W, as long as the bullpen's able to hold. And yeah, we are going to see triple digit bids for sure in 15 team leagues. When we talk about that, we're usually discussing the NFBC main event. So, centering it around that, I think that he'll get close to, if not higher, in certain leagues or certain, you know, scenarios, given Fab budgets and where managers are with their ratios or needs of Ks, etc. I do expect Bobby Miller to be in the Taj Bradley and Tanner Bibee range.
So you know what's interesting? Maybe I misread it and I don't remember correctly, but I was looking at Zach Waxman puts out some Fab info, and I thought I remembered Bryce Miller, for whatever reason, was like the highest average spend, or maybe he was just like the most added because he was 0% going in, but I think he was like up there.
He was up there as well. Yeah, I can pull that up while we're recording to actually get the correct information on that.
And I don't know. I mean, because people are so low, I think obviously people that are capable or able to spend on Bobby Miller, especially after that outing, and it's at Atlanta. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And the allure of 100-mile-per-hour hurler, he's going to be pricey, but I don't know what that average bid price is going to be, because there are going to be a lot of teams that were just going to be tough for them. I mean, of course, there's always going to be, you know, 2 to 3 people in each league that can at least throw 250. So I think we'll see that for the most part. And again, this is a Dodger pitcher, but it's fantasy, man. I mean, it's not going to be without warts, right? Like last year he was excellent. So was Gavin Stone, but that was AAA. It was a whole different set of circumstances and environments. And then he had the shoulder issues earlier in the season, Bobby Miller, and then a little bit of ups and downs. The latest start he had in AAA was a nice gem. Previous to that, he got destroyed. So you just never know, right? It's he gems at Atlanta, then everyone spends up. He has a two-step the following week. It's going to be home Washington, home Yankees, and then, like, you know, watch him get pummeled by the Nationals, and, like, you know, like Corey Dickerson hits like a grand slam off of him or something, and then cruises against the Yankees. I mean, that's, they talk about it all the time. That's kind of the beauty of fantasy baseball. So unpredictable, but, like, you know, just don't be surprised if you spend on Sunday for Bobby Miller, and then Monday he gets crushed by the Nats.
Yeah, it's you know, kind of like people in my auction league. There was a 20%+ bid on Gavin Stone. He was available after being cut, and I'm assuming, I haven't looked, but I'm assuming if you spend 20%+ on somebody like Gavin Stone, you two-step against the Braves, the Rays, really tough, but you're starting that guy. And that also will kind of segue into something that I'll be using a little bit later on as an example with Gavin Stone, is I have Gavin Stone in the spot, and I am a Dodgers fan, and it took a lot for me to put him on the bench this week, even knowing, yes, he didn't look that great in his rookie outing, but he does have a high outlook and has that 30% plus strikeout rate in the minors and an elite changeup, right? So seeing a pitcher with a two-step and the kind of lack of depth with starting pitching right now and the struggles, you would think that with being mixed in with being a Dodger fan, et cetera, that I would just roll him out. And I'm fortunate enough that I didn't do that. But like as a bias of a fan, and in general, you know, you kind of have to put that to the side and just weigh like, what's the downside? What's the upside here? And I just didn't think that the upside, even with two steps in these matchups for Stone, was going to be, you know, good enough. If it was Bobby Miller, I think I might have changed the tune a little bit because just the velocity, right? And he's got the five pitch mix. And he clearly used it all tonight. So I think it's safe to say in the pecking order, if you were weighing the two, Bobby Miller would be above Gavin Stone. That's safe to say at this point.
Yeah, right. And then, I mean, but I mean, that was my preseason take. I know our guy Brock Miller was feeling the opposite, and he was, he was loading up on Gavin Stone everywhere. We don't know, right? I mean, we're going to see the way that it plays out. You know, you and I were both Bobby over Gavin there. I ended up with a lot of Gavin Stone. I overbid in some OCs, probably overdid it, especially on teams where I had like loaded pitching, you know, team where like, you know, Freddie Peralta is like your SP4 and Sonny Gray's your SP3, and it's like unnecessary, but I spent about 136 in two leagues. Backups were 48 and 78, and these are 12 teamers. I'm now down to like $210 in those leagues. Not really necessary, but I did it. And then of course I started him there. One I'm stoked about is on my super auction. It's a $2,500 entry drafted live in Vegas. I grabbed Gavin Stone, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, for $8. Man, it felt good. Even if things aren't going necessarily, things didn't go all that well that first start, just to grab him for $8 there where he was kind of off the grid. I mean, that's where I love to, you know, just shine and grab those fallen players, even if it's not looking all that great right now. Bobby Miller was dropped in my, it was my earliest main event. So it was the main event, I think, that first weekend online. Someone drafted Bobby Miller and dropped him a few weeks ago. He happened to pop up on my radar. I looked it up, you know, just to see if any Millers were available. I'm like, oh, main event here, only 2% rostered. And then obviously in 98% of leagues, he wasn't available or isn't available till next Sunday. So I had quite the quandary there. I had a team, that main event team had $280 to spend. Obviously could use some pitching. I think everyone can at this point. And I was trying to figure out what to bid. I started off in the 80s. I think I put 86 as my original bid. And then I got a little, you know, just trying to figure out what I should do with it. I ended up with 113 and I won them. Dude, I'm stoked. Granted, I only have 140 left in that league. It's by far the lowest of any of my leagues. So I spent 113 of like 270. So like whatever, 40, 45% to get them. The backup was 74. So that's the one regret. Had I left it at 86, I would have just ended up getting him anyways.
How do you go about, and I'm sure people are wondering this because you mentioned now that you have, you know, low 200s and then below that in another league, and these are important high stakes leagues. How do you go into with, you know, more than half of the season remaining and sub 80% or close to that in budget left, or I should say 20% or the opposite thereof. What changes for you? You have to tighten things up, obviously. Mm-hmm. You have to be sharper around the edges, but now you obviously have to be comfortable enough knowing if I win player, you know, X with this bid, I'm going to have, you know, this amount left remaining with how much season is left. What change does anything change? Obviously, yeah, changing the bid amounts have to change because there's just not that much left in the tank or the bank. But what do you do to stay optimal, right? How do you optimize this with the lower FAB budget?
I don't know. So this is kind of uncharted territory for me. I've never had this low of funds this early. And I even told myself going into this year, I would try to have a little bit more discipline. I think I've talked about it before. Having a FAB column where I'm putting everything out there and just really being so in tune with everything that's going on, I end up kind of, you know, moving around and tweaking a lot. The one thing is some of these teams that I have less money on, I feel like they had good bones, I guess, like good structure going into the season. And a couple of things like I have guys waiting in the wings, right? I've got a lot of these teams have Liam Hendricks, they have Carlos Rodon, they have Tyler O'Neill, Brandon Woodruff, Jacob DeGrom. I'm just waiting for some of these guys to eventually get back, and that'll kind of help things a little bit. The problem is what I should be doing is spending like, and I have already gotten tighter, but spending like 2 to 3 here and there, instead of like, you know, low teens. One example of that is Edouard Julien. He, in that team where I got Bobby Miller, and I knew if I won him, I wouldn't have much left. I put 13 on him, and the backup was 4. And obviously that doesn't feel good considering like what happens when Jorge Polanco is back. All of a sudden I'm having to drop Julien because he's sent back down to the minors. Like, those aren't like really wise moves. The problem is that middle infield depth, right? Like, I mean, I'm going to end up with like Pablo Reyes, who might be back in the minors next week too, but hey, maybe that's worth it over a dollar. But I'm really just trying to maximize week to week, like really load up on, you know, what I need, and you know, kind of go from there. But I'm getting tighter on the bids.
Speaking of Edouard Julien, Rocco Baldelli doesn't get enough riff for trying to galaxy brain stuff, similar to Oliver Marmol or Gabe Kapler. Baldelli's really fucking annoying. He platoon splits a lot with the lefties. We've heard about that with Kirilloff. Edouard Julien was going to be leadoff yesterday. Then he was going to hit cleanup. And then the Giants put in Manai in the second inning, who is a left-hander. So then he swaps out this rookie who gets called up, Julien, and Solano comes in to pinch hit and taking out this kid. Like, what are you doing? I can't stand some of this stuff that we're seeing with some of the managers. And Baldelli should be considered that because he was a Tampa Bay Ray and he comes from that tree. He thinks he's sharp mm-hmm. enough to like just, you know, run his ship like that. And I love the Twins, and I think that they have a great chance of winning the pennant this year, but he needs to cut that shit out. With Julien though, I think there actually could be a little bit more sustainability than most people think. And obviously that is why the bids were a lot lower than Matt McClain or somebody close to that. Julien does have the capability to pop off. He has the skills, talent. Some people don't like the term pedigree, but he has that as well, being a blue chip prospect. Can we call it that? You mentioned Polanco on the IL. So you're going to get 2 weeks of burn there in the middle infield. But now we had Carlos Correa scratched today from the lineup, and he's dealt with back injuries in his previous history. That's in his portfolio. Byron Buxton was in the lineup. He had a home run today, but he's kind of dealt with some stuff. You have Nick Gordon on the IL. Max Kepler's on the IL. He should come back soon. Last thing I read, he was running at 70%. So he's ramping back up. But then you just had Trevor Larnach go on the IL. So you are seeing a lot of guys get hurt there. And this is it's a weak division, and they are the cream of the top. And I think that they should be using their best players. And hopefully if Julien, being an OBP monster, if he's able to succeed, and we are seeing a lot of injuries, there could be a potential for him to stick.
By the way, I was rooting for him. Well, that day you're talking about the galaxy brain. So I try to out galaxy brain that. So I played DFS that day, and I knew that John Brebbia was coming in for an inning, maybe two. And I saw the way the lineup was constructed. I knew Manaea had been pure garbage, Sean Manaea. And so what I did is I stacked righties against him. Even like Gallo wasn't originally in the lineup, and then when they scratched Solano, then he was in. So I had like, you know, Buxton, Gallo, I forgot who else, and it didn't work out because Sean Manaea had the rare gem. So he came in and I think through 3 or 4 innings got like 8 strikeouts, just completely shut him down. So that did not work out, but I got all those guys like super low percentage, and had it hit, would have been like, you know, like a GPP winner type. But yeah, it was interesting because I believe one of the guys, I forgot if it was Kirilloff or Julien, didn't even get an at bat. They brought in like Kyle Garlick in right away for one, Solano for the other. And it was like, it looked like Baldelli didn't know. I mean, obviously he knew that, you know, it was an opener and that the lefty was going to come in. But just the way it was all kind of constructed and the way he did that was just like, it was just like much ado about nothing. It was really dumb.
Yeah, he should have kept Julien as the leadoff hitter to face the righty and then figured it out from there. And, yeah. And when you're burning bats that early too, that's just not optimal in any situation in baseball.
And you lost all that, you know, all that yeah. for basically nothing.
Yeah. What have you been watching tonight? Has anything good happened for you fantasy wise tonight? What's been a highlight for you?
I mean, tonight, tonight is like, you know, tomorrow or, I mean, who knows, some people might be listening to this on Friday, so may already be moot at this point. But no, Bobby Miller, man, you know, I'm obviously pretty excited about that. But yeah, a couple interesting things, like just things going on around the league. I think everyone knows, you know, the season has started, and I pretty clear, everyone knows my this year's Yelich is Taylor Ward, and it's not looking good so far for him. We'll talk a little bit later about like bias and investment bias, which I think is an interesting topic, something I tweeted about earlier. But as of now, Mickey Moniak, former first overall pick, he is the leadoff man against right-handed pitching, which basically pops Taylor Ward in as the short side platoon for now. Granted, Taylor Ward has 27 runs. He's got 4 home runs, you know, stolen base, 17 RBI, something like that. So it's not horrific, but not like what we expect, and obviously nowhere close to a guy that could even come sniff, you know, second round fantasy value. And I think it's a, I think it's still early. I think there'll come a point where, and this is again not me just because I'm invested, because I have to prove myself. Like, I think Taylor Ward is a good hitter that just kind of got off to a bad start in a slump, and I think at some point he'll, you know, shoot, he's got an option left. Maybe it takes a minor league stint. We see that happen a lot. Guy goes down to the minors, kind of figured themselves out again, come back up and start mashing. And if you remember Taylor Ward last year, quite streaky. Like, he was the top hitter in baseball from like mid-April through the end of May, something like that, or until he got hurt, and then was cold after he got back from his injury, and then again, just like red hot in September. So we'll see those stretches. I don't know what lesson there is to take from this yet. I will look at it at the end of the season. But right now, on Wednesday, the Angels will finish the series with the Red Sox, and or maybe it's the third or fourth game, I'm not sure, but James Paxton will be on the mound. He's a lefty, so we should pretty much expect Taylor Ward to lead off there. But yeah, what do you think so far there with Taylor Ward, and any chance that he comes close anywhere to earning his fantasy value?
Well, playing time is key. Or king, I should say, and he's going to need that to be able to pay off the price. I don't think that that's going to happen at this point because he's already starting to get squeezed for that, and the power metrics are down. Good news is that the strikeout rate isn't climbing, so there's nothing weird there. The BABIP is 30 points lower than his career high. The OBP is 20 points lower than the career high. WRC Plus is only at 74. You mentioned the platooning, which is going to be a problem. If the barrel rate's cut in half from last season, so in 2022 he was at 12.1%. This season's at 6%. It's troublesome. The one thing I will say is we have seen him put it together, and when it does click, a lot of goodness happens. And Ohtani and Trout are healthy and in that lineup right now, so whatever it takes for it to click, and if it does click and he gets the playing time back, that's what we need, is the playing time first and foremost. If he's cut, I would look to potentially make a speculation ad, that, because it could provide a buying opportunity for the next person, right? I think that that's potentially where we should be looking at this point. But other than that, if you're going to hold, that's fine. I understand that, but you can't expect to get a positive ROI at this point, I don't think.
And you can drop him in a 12 if you need to, because there are players that are available. Like, I benched him in 12s just because I saw the righties coming up. I kind of assume Moniak would probably, as long as he's hot, he'll kind of get those at bats. And we have a lot of depth usually in 12 teamers. We can mix and match. So there's no reason to take a guy that, you know, is going to be sitting on the bench. The only team that's tough to do that with is the Rays, because they don't have a real method to the madness. Like, other than, I mean, usually if it's a lefty, you know, Josh Lowe won't be in. Usually, maybe these days, Brandon Lau isn't as well. But like, between Margot and you know, Harold Ramirez and Paredes and Jose Siri, you know, there really isn't a method. It's not like, oh, if it's a lefty, then X. If it's a righty, then Y. It's kind of messed up. So you just, you know, if the Rays have good a schedule, right? Like, this first half week, they had 4 games. You're like, man, I'm I'm going to play Siri, you know, even if he plays two games, because you're getting a lot of like per plate appearance goodness with these guys, right? Like every time you look at a box score, oh, Jose Siri popped another home run. I don't care that he's hitting at the bottom of this lineup.
Yeah. So that's actually, it just made something click for me that I wanted to bring up is in the past, I used to heavily, heavily weigh only, even though it's only one extra game. So if we were looking at a full slate of games for the week, seven games being the total and five would be the lowest, let's say, and then six is our median. This week, we don't have any five games being played. It's seven or six. So for me, I'm trying to do a better job of telling myself, you know, with this day and age, minus superstars, regardless of how many games are being played, if you got a player that's hot, et cetera, hitting in the middle of a lineup, you know, excluding that, but like looking at the Jaren Durans and you know, players around there, CJ Abrams, I'm trying to pull players from one of my teams to use as an example. And you see seven games versus three games, I'm going to try and not weigh it as much as I used to in the past, saying, wow, this guy's got the extra game. Whereas I used to just be really, really heavy on that, because likely they're going to sit one of those games out of four. I mean, we're just seeing it more times than not. Even with the guys that are getting heavy, 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 heavy playing volume, when there's four games, they might sit against one, you know, opposite handedness, you know, CJ Abrams might sit against a lefty and he's playing a shit ton of, you know, even though he is facing a lot of lefties, just as an example, he sat this last Sunday. So I'm trying to weigh more where they're hitting in the lineup, how they're currently hitting success wise, what categorical needs I'm having and what they provide, team context, park factor, and less of, they have that extra game, because the percentages probably say they might not really be playing the full four anyways, right? So if it's 7-3, I'm going to just go with the better team context, or, you know, what I just mentioned. So trying to do a better job of that as well. You know, I don't know. There's just so much going on. I'm just trying to optimize every little way possible, but it's a tough game we play, but it's what makes it fun. You there? You're there. Nope. Quit hitting mute.
You hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi.
And I turned off my fan because maybe that had been messing with the sound. So hopefully I'm back to normal here.
Okay. Okay. So sometimes, apologies, Vlad was cutting in and out here and there, and I thought maybe it was the cell phone. So sometimes cell phone, the frequency can kind of mess with the mic and cut things up. So I always grab my phone when recording a podcast and I just throw it away. So nice. It's never near the mic. But yeah, you do actually sound a whole lot better.
Hey, all right. Hey, should we re-record everything we just did?
No, I'm just hoping that you don't break up again after jinxing.
No, I'm good. Now we're good now. Who were you just talking about?
Optimizing schedule, or maybe even lack thereof, trying to weigh other things versus how many games are being played. Obviously, if it's four games compared to two games, you probably just take the player that's in the starting lineup on the first game and you roll the four. But when I see a team playing seven games versus six games, I'm going to try and choose the better option and not weigh the seven games four games versus the three games for the first half of the week.
I was going to say, I think how much we've advanced, like I don't recall doing this maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. And of course I think, feel like we're more in tune with platoon splits and everything like that. But sometimes you just kind of roll with it. Oh, four games, let's go. Now we're kind of looking at it a little bit more in depth, and people should be doing that. They should be calculating how many games, looking at those lefty righty splits, especially in NFBC where you've got the half week scenarios.
Yeah, because even some of those like Giants players or the Minnesota Twins are actually probably a good example. We already know like the Giants do this, and we know that the Tampa Bay Rays for the most part do this, outside of excluding, you know, the everyday players of Wander Franco and Yandy Diaz. There are certain teams, and the Twins are kind of getting there a little bit, out excluding, I would say, Max Kepler gets to face lefties for the most part when he's not on the shelf. That seems to be a common trip for him, but it's just something to, it seems seems or sounds pretty obvious, but I think it's important to always see, like, if it's a lefty, how many lefties are they facing in this four game first half of the week? Because maybe it's not as optimal as you think.
A couple more players here to mention. By the way, Jake Berger on this Tuesday evening, he struck out all five times. I forgot what that's called even.
Good. It's more than a sombrero, but good, because I'm getting tired of the Jake Berger love. And Brock and I used to be part of the Berger whatever fan club, but it's gotten out of control for me, and I didn't get enough when people started scooping him up again. So yeah, I'm out on that.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, let's kind of jump to this now. We can talk about some of these players later. Maybe that's a good segue here. I tweeted earlier about what I feel is, I mean, I guess there is a term called investment bias, but like I kind of like came up with it myself. I know it's nothing new, right? But it's basically how many tweets and how I feel, and I think how people feel in general, like wish casting for specifically for your players, right? Like, the more invested you are in a player, like I have 45% Josh Lowe. He's my man. He's my God. He can do no wrong. I discovered him, quote unquote. And anyone who I don't have, who's not doing well, it's or is doing well or isn't doing well, I just have like a negative opinion. I'm not invested in them. So it's like this inherent bias that we have, I think, in stocks and life and in any format, really, but especially in fantasy. And it's so hard to be able to separate that. And you just brought up the perfect example. You're like, screw Jake Berger. Like, but, and then the reason came out, I don't have enough shares. But if you had a bunch of shares and he was smashing it, then you'd be
I'd be eating cheeseburgers, taking selfies, and dude, woo, with my White Sox jersey on a burger. Abso-fucking-lutely. Bruce Dar Gratterall, let me just take over real quick. That's my highlight example. And I just went to player shares. Stats, player shares, NFBC, 52.9%. Bruce Dar Gratterall, still my highest rostered player. And last night I texted you after Evan Phillips comes in a high leverage spot to clean up Gavin Stone's garbage, gets out of the jam, huge jam in the game. Dave Roberts knew when to use Phillips against this high octane Braves offense. You know, just genius moment by Roberts, to be honest. I message you and say, dude, Phillips coming in the fifth. Brewstar's going to end up getting another save opportunity. And you're like, you got to drop it with Brewstar, man. You won with the Alvarado and you got that run right, but we might not win them all, right? And for me, I'm agreeing with you. I'm guilty of this with Brewstar. I looked smart last night because he got a save with an inning in third. One strikeout, scoreless, et cetera, might get another save tonight. And then we really get things going right. Now we're banging the desk again. But it's a biasy. I'm not even talking about what laundry or uniform or jersey you rep every day of the week. If it's a LA Dodgers, San Francisco Giant, Boston Red Sox, whatever team you root for, not that biasy. We as fantasy players threw that out a long time ago. But yes, we wish cast things upon players, and it can hurt you. So for me, Marcus Stroman was awesome to begin the season. I now live in Chicago. I go to Cubs games a lot. He was doing so good for me as an 18th, 19th round pick. Then you feel the need to just roll him out all the time. Maybe you should hit the brakes on that, right? Because of the environment we're in and what we're seeing. Stroman's not somebody that you should just be, what do we call that with a pitcher? Like a Garrett Cole. You run him out there without the matchup, right?
Well,
plug and play. Yeah. So like I was treating Stroman like that and it fucking bit me in the ass a couple weeks ago. And I should have been smarter than that, but it was kind of my own bias of just a lot of different things combining for, I'm going to have that happen or I want that to happen. More of I want that to happen. And the other negative for that for me, that used to be, and this is why I actually do not play DFS anymore for MLB. I only play NFL DFS, is because if I were to have Kevin Gausman on a high stakes main event team and every fifth day on DraftKings, I'm clicking on the app or going on the computer and I'm going to have to roster Kevin Gausman because I'm so biased towards, I need it. I'm already hungry for it. I'm thirsty. I need success from Kevin Gausman and I'm not a person to hedge as much. I'm going to fucking double down. I want more of it. I want all the success. I want all of it. And so that, and when it hurts, oh, it stings twice as much. So I stopped doing DFS because I realized my wish casting or my wants or my hopes were transferring over into a different realm. And you can't do that. It's just not optimal. And it was hurting me in DFS. It wasn't providing me a profit. And then in betting, I caught myself doing that on DraftKings Sportsbook or FanDuel or whatever, sportsbook app. It's kind of similar to DFS. Oh, well, Gossman's on the mound. Got to bet him to win. He's my horse. He's an ace. Just using him as an example. Mm-hmm. There's other pitchers or whatever it may be. But it can cause problems. And then when it hurts, I think the lesson for me is when you do that and you kind of go down your own rabbit hole, man, when it backfires, it stings more than the normal, welt.
Well, I was going to say, if you're hungry for it and you're playing DFS, you might as well just roster Jake Lamb and Jake Berger, right?
Absolutely. Would you prefer a lamb or a beef burger? You ever had a lamb burger? They're good.
I have had a lamb burger. Yeah. Good. So what sucks for us is my wife really cannot stand this scent of lamb. So we just don't have it in the house. But I love a good rack of lamb, anything like that. I think it's tasty. I think it's tastier than beef. Depends what kind of beef. But yeah, man, the bruised dart thing is funny because this goes back quite a bit. And it's me, right? You have to be even selective among your network of friends, like who you trust on what and at what time, right? It's almost like playing DFS. You're like, okay, I'm going to roster this. I'm feeling this. And then you're either feeling or not feeling someone's recommendation. And I think tell me if this isn't true. Sometimes you go with your friends, your smart fellow NFBC friends, and sometimes you fade them because you feel that just like they're off, right? I think like we all do that. And the bruised dart thing is funny because you convinced me and I'm not blaming you because it's not working out, but I could see you're telegraphing the wish casting and your argument made sense. It's the same argument I had when I was wanted Daniel Hudson, when I was drafting the Daniel Hudson shares in February. It's the fact that Evan Phillips is best suited, and that's even the quotes, it's everything that we saw, best suited to handle high leverage role, come in the early innings. But as we've seen with these Dodgers, that can happen anytime. He came in the fifth, as you mentioned. Now Gradwell got the save on Monday. Tuesday, he comes in the sixth. So this is a mess, right? And we just don't know what it's going to be like. And actually, we do. We know it's just a straight-up committee, and it's random. We don't know who's going to get the saves when. The problem was that week, whatever it was, a month ago, I had that last-minute surge of like, oh, dude, I'm going to get Gradwell. He's totally the guy. Totally makes sense. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. And so, and it's like Matt Liberatore, right? If he hadn't have had that, bullpen, showing in the weekend where he came in and then he was still expected to start this week, those bids would have been huge because he was coming off of that gem earlier in the week. He needed to kind of get his innings in and then he got beat up a little bit. And then everybody said, whoa, backed up, prices went down. And then now we're just kind of seeing this in real time. The Cardinals are just an absolute mess with the way that they're dealing with the rotation. We know Mozeliak seems to have some issues. I don't know what his issues are. Ollie Marmol is kind of like a puppet coach, not really good one. And it's a mess, man. This rotation's a mess. Like, Jaymont just got blasted. Like now Liberatore looks like he's going to be a bullpen guy. Do they want to go six man? Do they want to go back to five man? Like what in the hell are they doing? I don't really know, but that saved a lot of people money. And then I guess Liberatore was warming up in the pen again on Tuesday. And man, that's not looking good.
Did it save people money?
No. People still spent like 150-ish, right?
Exactly. And if he's coming out of the fucking bullpen in this whatever role, it ain't worth it. I agree. I concur. The Cardinals are a mess. They're an absolute mess. Get this though. The live odds for NL Central right now, Brewers -135, and I don't even think that they win the division, but they're the favorite. Cardinals +220, then it falls to the Cubs at +800, Pirates at +850, and Reds at +5,000. So you really have Brewers -135, Cardinals +220, and Cubs +800. I actually think I still like the Cardinals at +220 to win the division. But they do have to get things right. And they have good depth in certain spots that they don't need. Mm-hmm. So they need Mozeliak, and he's known to make trades. So he needs to make a trade. I think that he needs to go out and get another starting pitcher, and he can afford to trade at least one outfielder and then some sort of other utility player or hitter. So, or even a bullpen piece, but they need to do something because baseball still needs consistency. I understand the analytics and what you need to do to optimize each and every, you know, outlook of a game, et cetera, and to be the best, but dude, consistency still is pretty necessary, I think, in baseball. And you see some of the teams succeeding still are consistent. Even if you're batting Jose Abreu fifth every day, and he's not hit a home run, you're fucking consistent and you're succeeding. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Wally Pippen continues. Mickey Moniak leadoff bomb off Brian Bello, Brian Bello, right off the bat. So this interesting in real time going down.
Do you think Taylor Ward, as a teammate and competitor and person that's looking to make his own money as this is his profession and career, he knows what's going on, the scenario, situation around that somebody else is taking his gig and playing time, etc. Do you root for these scenarios as a teammate of the Angels, or are you like, I hope this guy shits the bed so I can kind of get my opportunities back?
It depends on the person, right? There's some people that are more selfish than others. They're then there's like kind of pushovers and, you know, nice people. But I mean, of course, you can put on one front and appear as a good team. You can be both. You can be a good teammate and still want to thrive and get there. And you recognize that this isn't your only window. It's just a platoon with Mickey Moniak, right? Like, if you're really good, you'll play another. He's played different outfield positions. They'll figure out some way, or maybe Trout gets hurt at some point. So it can be, it doesn't have to be that black and white. It can be both. He's probably really frustrated with himself. He liked that breakout, obviously, with what he did last season, and wanted to build on it. And he had the perfect opportunity. I mean, what's better than being able to lead off in a great ballpark half the time, good hitter's park with usually typically good weather, leading off in front of like the best, Trout, Otani? Like, this was a situation set up for success, especially considering they didn't really have true leadoff hitters. David Fletcher was all but just done for. He was given every opportunity. This is, these are the way that these things go. And this is why I'm trying to separate myself from the person of it. Like James Outman.
Right? I didn't even notice, like, when you guys brought him up actually last week, when you, Eric and Sammy brought him up, I didn't even know the struggles that were going on when you guys started talking. Plug it and play every week. James Outman, he's a stud, rookie of the year. He just goes into the lineup. I think sometimes that's also another flaw, and that's been brought up on our podcast and other podcasts and et cetera. Just not realizing in current time how a player is performing and just rolling him out there. And you're just eating bad numbers because you're not picking up on the current garbage.
Yes. This is why I took a little break. I hadn't played defense for the first month and a half, super busy. Now a little bit more time to be able to set up some lineups. And I check every box score as is, but now when I'm doing DFS and more articles, like I write a pitching article now 3 times a week for our DFS site, FTN Daily, and I'm even more so in tune. But I'm, you know, when I look at the Dodgers box score, even on a game I don't watch, and I'm noticing consecutive, let's see, James Outman 1-for-4, but 2 strikeouts. Next game, 0-for-3, 0-for-4, 3 strikeouts. Okay, all right, let me go check out his strikeout rate. Okay, what's going on? Oh, the next game, he's moved lower in the lineup. Oh, he's resting now against the lefty. Ooh, he just rested against a righty. And then, I mean, David Peralta's there. What if he just happens to catch fire at the time that Outman cools off? Like, this is why we can't get too gung-ho about any one thing, because anything is always just in that moment. Like, for example, do you think Paul DeJong is going to do this every day? You know, he can be fine. Maybe he's reborn. Maybe he's just like a new version of himself. It's possible. Players have done that before, but I don't think so. Is Christopher Morel going to hit a home run every single freaking day? No, but could he be one of the best fab ads of the season? Yeah. Yeah. Very, very possible.
That's a great example, because he's going to hit the skids. And when he does, people are going to be rolling him out there, and it's going to fucking hurt.
It's what happened last year.
When he goes bad.
He's not a new person all of a sudden.
When it goes bad, it's going to go real bad. And people are going to keep, well, he hit 8 home runs and X amount of at bats. I got to keep. Yeah, that's fantastic. Oh, Bautista just blew a save to an Aaron Judge home run. So the people in the Bronx are going crazy in the night.
Wow. Yeah, and Garrett Cole had a bad game there. Yeah, oh, so I
can, terrible.
So I was quiet. I did not, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but I could be a little, you know, not nitpicky, but I could be, you know, a little semi-aggressive, not like super nice Vlad all the time on Twitter. But, you know, most of it's tongue-in-cheek, it's in jest. I hope people understand that. But I did not say anything when Christopher Morel was called up because he looked really good. It's definitely a kind of a different guy, but I couldn't get out of my head. And this is not me negative wish casting because I don't have enough shares or whatever. I do have a little bit of Morel. This is separate of that fact, but I just remember him well last year because he came up, he was promoted, if you recall, and he was balling out. He had a phenomenal start to the season. He was leading off. This was a much worse Cubs team. They were really, really bad. And then, but he was striking. He was excellent in the month of May, and then worse and worse until he got demoted. So it was like a 34% strikeout rate in June. And then by August, he was hitting ninth and platooning with a 1% walk rate and a 40% strikeout rate before he gets sent down. So just something to keep in mind, because these things do happen to pop back up.
Yeah, they're always going to pop back up. That's just that's kind of the funny thing, is everything, the one thing consistent in life is change, and you're going to see that in the numbers too. They're going to continuously change. How are you handling? We talked about handling crappy teams. How are you going about fixing
my good ones? Are you talking about our fantasy teams?
Yeah, like
so much more carefully. So much more. Like overanalyzing.
Yeah.
15 minutes on whether I was going to start my new Josh Fleming versus Waka at the Yankees versus Gratterall, because I got you in my head and I needed saves. And then, of course, you know, dude gets a save on Monday. I did end up going Fleming. But yes, I spent so much extra time. I would like 5 minutes on Jorge Mateo versus the Brendan Donovan I just added, but I'm like, oh, I know he's sitting at Donovan's out on a Monday, but he's going to get three righties. He's been so cold. He's kind of due. I need some stolen bases, and you know, voila, stave on Tuesday. But you take those games, you take the three at Cincy, the guy rising versus the Mateo that's kind of cold right now. Those are chances you take, but yes, so much more time I spend on the good teams. That's another bias. Why do my not so good teams deserve, you know, like those teams could pop back up and my good teams could become my bad teams.
Do you become more reckless a little bit, like loose and lenient? Absolutely. Like with like
on the bad,
especially
team?
With like an OC team, like a special, like not maybe not a main event, but like an OC team, like if that team's like let's call it 8th place, 9th place, 10th place, you're 70, 60 points in an OC, it's kind of like, oh fuck, I need volume. Let's just stream this. Let's get K's. Let's like, you kind of just like, it's a sailor at the sea kind of thing, right? It's
yeah, it depends on,
it's a little, you know, wild.
Depends on what sailor and what sea. But yes, absolutely. I get, you know, reckless, and that's part of the problem with playing volume. If I have, you know, 10 fab teams.
Yeah.
And when I'm writing my column on Friday night and Saturday morning, that's really when I should be at least popping in the bids.
Yes.
Because I'm focused then. And then the weekend happens. I'm hanging out with the family. And then when I then get to the Sunday, then I start to get overwhelmed. I'm like, holy crap, I'm behind on setting my stuff here. what am I doing? So yeah, so then sometimes you get reckless. But the key is I always pull back. I always make sure that no matter where I'm at, I stop for like a half an hour. I step away, I go do something else, and then I come back. And at that point, I usually lower my bids.
I've started to try and get better at going into free agency in my leagues when I notice something small, to just leave a little flag there for me. So whether it be, oh, Emmanuel Clase a couple outings ago, et cetera, and I'm doing a bullpen report update and I'm looking into Trevor Stephan and looking at this, I'll go to Fab and click on him real quick and look at something like Ian Hamilton. If he was on a team, he's already out the full week with a fucking groin strain. He's on the IL. You already know that guy's a cut. You go to the roster, you click on him as a cut and just boom, add that guy for now. And maybe it's not someone that you're even going to have in your contingency come Sunday. But you're going to then, I know that they have the watch list, but I don't really like, it's kind of, I don't use that a lot. I kind of just like to add them and then dig in a little bit deeper come, you know, my time for research, et cetera. And be, okay, why did I do that on a Tuesday? And then go back and look to try and see if there's something there and maybe get a cheap ad for a dollar that way.
By the way, we've never had a year where if you set some bids in on like a earlier in the week or even on a Friday or mm-hmm. Saturday, you still have to go back and do something to add new players anyways, because every week there's a, right. This week is Matt McClain. You know, if you put your stuff in on Friday, like you know, he wasn't active until and then same thing with Gavin Stone, Bobby Miller, like Bryce. I mean, all of these guys, it's really crazy. You got to always come back on the weekend, on Sunday to add someone in.
You mentioned Bruiser Gratterall earlier, and he pitched tonight in the seventh inning, and then Evan Phillips pitched the eighth inning, and the Dodgers were up by four. So, yeah, like you said, committee, I just call it a fucking mess. But mm-hmm. with that being said, we do know that option A is still Phillips, right? To get probably to end the season with the majority of the saves for the Dodgers, excluding anything that happens at the trade deadline, just ROS from what they have right now. And Bruiser is still option B as I kind of highlighting the bias of this title probably for the podcast. Yeah, I would still lean Bruiser. He was cut in a lot of places. If you're super desperate and I think even if we exclude the Dodgers and Bruiser in the name, if there's a team that has a committee similar to the Dodgers and they have talent and you know there's an option B like Bruiser, if they have a 7-game week, I think they're optimal enough to use and take a shot on. So this week, the Dodgers only had 6 and it was a bad schedule, right? Braves and Rays, tough offenses. But like if the Dodgers were facing the Giants and the Nationals or Marlins, and they had 7 games. Like Bruiser, I know people are going to be like, look at the K rate. It's not that great. He could still fall into one win and a save and pitch 3 or 4 times in that week and be an be better than the who now. It was Kenta Maeda and Mike Clevenger we were using as the examples who would be the starting pitcher that's just been, Graham Ashcraft. He would be, and you
yuck, held up an ERA.
Remember you did some sort of little deep dive on ERA and minus FIP. And I was like, yeah, dude, mm-hmm. Graham Ashcraft is not, that's broken.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like, yeah, avoiding the Graham Ashcrafts right now, and using a Bruiser Gratterall or whatever reliever it is that you like in a 7-game week, Eric Swanson. I know we've talked about this before. Use those guys instead. Trevor Stephan, use him instead. There's a lot of these guys.
By the way, the hard part is projecting the innings. So like I was looking and I wanted to play Bruiser and I'm like,
sure.
Wait, one and two thirds last week, two innings the week, and he doesn't strike out. So that was my one problem with, and then so, and I had one spot for him or Brian Abreu, which isn't really a ideal situation to be in considering he needs saves.
So the way that I look at usage and who to, let's say, start the week of, the week that you're about to set your lineups would be, so for Bruiser, he had worked, like, even though one of the outings was like 0.1 or 0.2, didn't pitch a full inning, and then one might be 1.1 inning, so he's going in and out through the inning, or multiple innings, I should say. And then you notice, so he's pitched like 3 of 4, and it's, wow, And then he hasn't been used in two or three games. So I did start him in a couple spots because of that usage. He was used a lot, and then they kind of teetered him back a little bit. With my mindset saying, okay, well, then they might be able to use him quite a bit. And we've already seen him 2 days this week, two games used, 2.1 innings, 2 Ks, 1 save, no earned runs. So, again, not using Brusdar as the example or the name, no jersey, no uniform, any reliever like this. So it would be the next man up. So Eric Swanson, Gallegos is too high roster to use in as an example, but there's these reliever, the Trevor Stephan dude for Cleveland. Like I'm total Matt Brash would be last week or the week before. Like if he's available, I want him in every fucking league.
Wait, available. Except for the fact that isn't he like been bad? But I know what you mean.
That's it. Excluding some of these results for some of these guys, the K minus walk rate, the strikeout rate, the ratios strikeouts that they have insane. For the full like
41%.
Body and the strikeouts that they could give you, the leverage spots, if you look at their usage index, they still can potentially nab a win. They could potentially nab a save, and they're getting more strikeouts than some of these, we'll call it the Graham Ashcrafts. Used to be Kenta Maeda and Mike Clevenger. So now Graham Ashcraft is that example. I don't want to use Graham Ashcraft. And if I have Graham Ashcraft on my roster, I don't want to go and look to stream somebody to fill in for Graham Ashcraft. That's where people are fucking themselves even worse right now, is let's cover up my pile of shit with another, like they're shining a turd right now with like streaming a pitcher ain't it, dude. If it's not Bobby Miller and it's like we're hoping that's a long term, or these young pitchers, we're excluding these young high prospect blue chip pedigree pitchers, you don't want to be streaming. I know people have been kind of keen to Patrick Corbin lately, and that's kind of worked out, but for the most part, if you look at all these pitchers that have been streamed, dude, they have fucked you over so bad.
You get out. When you do something like I have a team where I left Patrick Corbin in just because I didn't win any other bids and he had an at KC. It was like legit the only scenario in which I would leave him in. But after you get two, like that's the way the world works, the roto world works. It's regression, dude, both ways. After you get two wins from Patrick Corbin with no ERA damage in a week, you move on. You just don't go there. And it's just like a natural thing. Graham Ashcraft, by the way, I have one share. It was in my live Vegas main event. I got him just because, you know, he had fallen and I didn't really buy into the hype because I was like full fade on the Cincinnati pitchers, but I'm like, whatever, this is like my eighth guy or seventh guy. Let's grab him. I got those first few good starts. And then I got beat up a little bit and I kind of learned my lesson at this point. And you're looking at his last few starts. And is like, okay, he's not even striking guys out at this point. And then you start to remember who Graham Ashcraft was last year and not this like sort of new version that we saw with the, you know, monster stuff plus at the end of spring training. And then I did not start him. I actually used restraint and I did not start him for this two-step. And so far it looks like it's been a good call.
That's good, Vladdy. I would call that the Scott Farkas theory there. You got your ass whooped, and then you decided to pull
Who's
out.
Scott Farkas?
Oh, dude, he's the bully in Christmas Story, and he ends up getting the shit beat out of him by Ralphie. And all right, I got my ass beat. I'm done. I'm done doing this. Like, no more of that. No more of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would rather, like, even with the Gavin Stone tough two-step, put him on the bench. I would much rather have Eric Swanson for his seven games. And I know Eric Swanson gave up two earned runs, I think, in the last two outings. But I'll use him as an example because we know if it wasn't Jordan Romano pitching in a save opportunity, it would be Eric Swanson. If it wasn't Emmanuel Clase pitching in a save opportunity, it's going to be Trevor Stephan. So I want some of these guys that are 1 or 2%, rostered right now because they can fall into something good. And I'd rather have their two innings pitched and four strikeouts with good ratios and with the possibility of a win or a save compared to rolling out the Graham Ashcrafts.
Yeah.
I just don't want to do it. And whatever it is the week after this, and there's always going to be somebody that pitched good the week before. So, and then they have the Marlins or the Nationals or the Tigers or the Pirates the upcoming week or the Royals. And you talk yourself into it because one outing before that was good. And now they have a good park factor and a good, matchup. Man, I'm not playing that game this year, dude. I'm just not.
And- And it all, but it also depends on your team structure, because there are team fantasy rosters out there that have really good ratios near the top, sure. And they really need the strikeouts.
Well, yeah, but you'll fucking ruin your ratios trying to get those strikeouts.
Yeah. By the way, let's here just kind of wrap things up, and because these are perfect examples of this, but closers, a few closers here, and yeah. I know you do your updates twice weekly. But a couple of things I wanted to mention on the point you were just talking about. If you recall, Miguel Castro, I think, got a couple of saves.
Yeah.
And then people start to panic. Oh, my God. What about my Chafin? What about my no, dude, relax. This is like read each situation. These are two guys that Castro's been pitching well enough that he earns occasional save opportunities. I don't know who's the 1A or 1B. I guess it's Chafin is the 1A, even though he's the lefty. But both will continue to get opportunities, because what happened on Monday? Chafin got the save as soon as a lot of people thinking that it's an all Castro thing.
Chafin, okay, it's really funny that people are crapping all over Chafin, who's having a career season, and I don't have much, if any, of Chafin. I actually drafted him in the Las Vegas NFBC main event as pick 29 right before Jose Alvarado, and cut him the first week before they played the Dodgers for the four games. That didn't work out for me. I wish I had Andrew Chafin. We have a podcast group chat on Twitter, right, with multiple people, and all these people talk shit about Andrew Chafin. And I don't respond or say anything, but if you look at Andrew Chafin, looking at relievers, he's top 10 in K minus walk rate at 29.5%. He ranks ninth. He's one of only, I believe it's like four or five of these relievers that qualify with that K minus walk rate above 25% and a Sierra below 3. His Sierra is at 2.36. And then when you look at, I believe it's his swinging strike rate, that's at a career high as well. I'll try and pull that up real quick for Andrew Chafin, just so we can kind of get the full load here. But the point is like, people think Andrew Chafin name sucks, team sucks, he sucks. It's like, no, dude, he's getting the fucking job done and he's doing really well. His swing strike rate's 16.8%. He's having a career season and people want to crap on the guy. Like, I wish I had 100% Andrew Chafin.
Well, if you do crap enough in the guy, you will be Chafin.
That's a good one.
That's what it is. It's subconsciously people, like, the last name reminds me of them, and maybe they're all Chafin, and so that's why.
He needs to be sponsored by a baby powder company.
Yeah, yeah, whatever that, you know, ball rub is.
On that note, what should we leave, or?
No, I got one more, dude. Okay. How cyclical things are. Guess what? The A's have no closers, right?
Trevor May.
Danny Jimenez, 60-day IL. Yes, exactly. Danny Jimenez, 60-day IL. Juris Familia, gone. Yeah. Zach Jackson, IL now. They don't have they don't have anyone on their roster who has an active save on this team. It's a joke. You look at the four names, it's like, you know, Dick Lovelady and Austin Pruitt and, you know, whomever are like these co-closers. Well, guess what? Trevor May is back. Maybe he is going to get his stuff together. I don't know. I know he's had some anxiety or something, but like, no one's expecting the A's to get a lot of save ops, but when they win games, you know, when they have a lead, it won't be by much, most likely. Someone needs to step up. So kind of funny how things come around full circle. Let's see if people are bidding 40 plus on Trevor May after he grabs a save on Sunday.
I don't know if it'll cost that much. I think we would have to date back, maybe look at some previous bid history on where Zach Jackson went after he got his first save, although we haven't seen a save from Trevor May coming into the draft season right after spring training, or where we were bridging spring training to opening day. I was in on Trevor May around 19, 20, 21 in 400 DCs in my high stakes main event. I drafted him, and I think in round 21 or something like that. Phil Dussault, champ, robot, whatever the hell you want to call him. He was in on Trevor May a little bit as well. There's nobody there. I mean, you just named how many IL stints they've had, and they just struggle with talent in general. It's the fucking A's. So wins are going to be hard to come by. They barely just got their 10th win of the season, but I think that he's going to see when we read Zach Waxman's Fab report this upcoming week. A couple weeks ago, it was this. There's always like a player, and look at all these sharp players that added, you know, fantasy managers X added fantasy manager Y at cost Z. Sharp, sharp, sharp. I think maybe, and maybe not. I mean, I could be a laughing joke and a clown right now for saying it because he's got a negative 8.1 K minus walk rate.
That's why I'm a Whitestone's watch guy.
I love it. You know? Yeah. Right. He highlights all
I'm
that.
I'm kidding. Waxman's is good too. But two W's. Interesting. The two people doing fab pieces there.
The great pieces, both of them. I really do love both of them, and they are good weekly reads. Just to see all sorts of stuff with the fab data, though, it is important to digest some of that, I do think, as well. But going back to Trevor May, you could see him added for, I don't think it'll cost $40, like you were saying.
No. I'm being
sub, yeah, sub one facetious. For sub one to $9.
And you'll probably drop them the next week.
Maybe you get a save a week. But the big thing in theory here is with the A's and the context, I would say I honestly do believe that they're going to try and give this guy, with the contract they gave him, as much burn as possible in the high leverage closer duties, because they're going to trade him. They're going to trade Seth Brown on the offensive side. They're going to trade other starting pitchers. They're going to trade every single thing that they can. And Trevor May could potentially, because of what he's done in the past, showcase himself enough to get dealt. And he could get some saves along the way. So maybe
random question.
Speculation.
Random question. If you are a Dodger fan. So
that's not
and our outfield is where outfield is set, but you could always use another guy.
Oh god.
If you had your choice of who's a better fit for the Dodgers, Esturi Ruiz or Brent Rooker, who would you rather have if the cost was, like, say, the same?
Honestly, I would probably say Ruiz, but in total, I want Tyler O'Neill or that.
Do we though? I mean, so you know me, nobody has more shares than me. No, yeah, but right, like, yeah, right. I have so much Tyler O'Neill, but like, bro, now. He's like the big freaking Frankenstein, Ben Rorvet, style guy. He's freaking huge. His back he still can't recover from his back. Now he's starting to piss me off a little bit.
Is his back messed up though? Or is this a case of fuck you, Marmol and Mosaylock, get your shit together with the agent and figure out where I'm going? Because you this think? Ain't it. Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah.
Never know. Yeah.
Potentially, but bodybuilding does provide lower back injuries as well, but I'm not a doctor.
Nor a bodybuilder.
So yeah, but Taylor Ward, what about Taylor Ward? Would the Angels look to ship Ward to the Dodgers down the street?
No, not now, because his value is like rock bottom. But
so I think that he could potentially be an option. I think the Guardians need an outfielder. Speaking of trading for an outfielder, the Guardians would be a place to look. I know Rob DiPietro, shout out to what he's doing with his Patreon, Deadpool Hitter, the Pool Hitter Patreon, etc. He had a bold, what would we call that? What do you call it when you take a guess on something?
Prediction?
A prediction, yeah. Thank you. he can't call it a take, still, but a prediction. Love Rob and everything that he's doing, and I actually that sounded pretty good, like a Shane Bieber for Tyler O'Neill, something like that. The Guardians really do need an outfielder, and they need offensive help. Like it's clear as day, right? My daughter is 35 months old and could tell you that the Guardians can afford to get rid of starting pitching, and they could certainly use some offense and in the outfield. What about the Yankees getting a starting pitcher like Zach Gallen for potentially dealing a middle infielder? That could be interesting. The Diamondbacks need a middle infielder. They have some starting pitching depth. Yankees need some starting pitching. So yeah,
traded like twice or three times. Like, what is it people don't like about him?
I know. He'll probably get traded again. But it'll be interesting when we get closer to see the fantasy impacts that trades will provide for us, because there will certainly be playing time opening up. And I've heard this one. What do you think about this? Tim Anderson to the Dodgers.
No and thanks.
He's been poo poo, and I was out on him. He was
no thanks. Anybody that like kind of like if you really, I don't know if he's quitting on his team, but like I don't know. I don't know if he would be a great locker room guy. He's kind of like an all about me guy. So that's at least how I feel. I could be totally wrong, but everything kind of writing on the wall for me is like I don't think he would. It would be a good dynamic for him on that team.
For a fantasy perspective, though, the thought behind it
would be awesome.
Would be, oh, I'm going to the Dodgers. I'm playing on the best team. I've got a fresh start. I'm Tim Anderson. And then obviously team context and boom, liftoff, right?
Yeah, he'd probably start mashing again. One last final thing is you know this area. You know this guy, Cody Hewer.
Oh,
he's on a rehab assignment.
Yeah.
That is... Yep. Someone needs to close eventually. Yeah, a couple of us picked up some Jeremiah Estrada this week, but he isn't really getting those ops yet. But they don't have anyone, but they also haven't had a save op in a couple of weeks. So I don't know. The Fulmer experiment is over. Brad Boxberger's on the IL. Mark Leiter's been, Junior's been great, but kind of, you know, same thing, just not getting the ops. So who knows? But something's going to emerge at some point in the second half.
Yeah, so I think there's going to come a time where the Cubs realize, if not, they've already realized this in the offseason when they spent the money on Dansby, but there's going to come a point where they realize once games, because they haven't really had a lot of close games lately to have, you know, showcase save opportunities or who is this guy, but I think it's Jeremiah Estrada, 24% K minus walk rate. He's flashed it the most recently. So if you have recency bias, I hope David Ross, obviously he's starting to see this as the usage index kind of crept up for Estrada, but we still haven't seen him pitch with that 2-3 run lead or even 1 run lead. My best bet would be Estrada right now. And then with Hewer, if and when that time does come and he gets called up, we're going to have to wait for him to pitch. And then it's going to be a fab thing. And when we see him pitch, is it in the sixth? Is it in a low leverage situation? Is it a save opportunity right away? And that is going to tell us what the fab, the range in fab is going to be for him. So yep. If Estrada is still available, I would certainly look to take a shot. I think he's worthy because he would be in that Matt Brash, Trevor Stephan, Eric Swanson, Brusdar, Gratterall conversation that I was kind of mentioning earlier, Brusdar being on the lower end of the strikeout upside. But with Estrada, you kind of get all of that. He's only 66% owned in the main event. So he's still available in 34% of NFBC main events, which means his ownership percentage in the RotoWire online championship is going to be rather large. It's at 99%. So he's only rostered in 1% of leagues. I know that it's only a 12-team league, but if you're really, really desperate, your ratios are shit, and you're trying to correct things while not losing too much on strikeouts, somebody like Jeremiah Estrada, I think that he could be a poster boy of guys that I'm using this year. Last week, 3 innings pitched. Doesn't sound sexy. 0 ERA, a 1 whip with 6 strikeouts. At some point, if you get that with 1 win or 1 save in a week, you're fucking money. You're so money and you don't even know it, baby. So, yeah, yes, go get those guys. Go get those guys and use Jeremiah Estrada's over Graham Ashcraft's.
Yes, nice, nice. Yeah, so we covered a variety of topics, but at the end of the day, wanted to just remind you to be able, do what you can to step away from whatever it is you're super excited about, the player, a new situation, whatever, and just look at it as a whole, history, a history of that specific player, history of like similar, you know, comps or the team context. Like there's just so much to look at. Don't get too excited when exciting things happen. It's a very long season.
One of the real quick, and I know we got to go, but also like if you added Gavin Stone, if you added Matthew Liberatore this weekend and you obviously spent triple digits, 10%+ of your fab budget, you feel it's an absolute necessary obligation to start them right away. And that might not be optimal, right? How the fuck do you overcome that? I want the shiny new toy. Don't think he's a good start this upcoming week, but I'm fucking spending my money anyways. Man, it's a tough game we play.
It's tough, man. It's so much fun and still a lot of it to go, about 60% of the season to go. So we'll catch you next week for Matthew Davis. This is Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.